I think just to continue to expand and to show that audit is a business partner, is a critical role, audit and risk, and it deserves a seat just like the CMO or the CTO or the CIO at the table of the CEO.
Hello, and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the one platform that unites financial reporting, ESG, audit, and risk teams, so you have time to catch up on all those Oscar-winning movies. My name is Catherine Tsai, professional asker of questions, lover of venti soy chais. I'm looking forward to debiting a great conversation today, and I'm very glad to have you hanging 10 with us. Usually we're here with Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado, but right now I want to introduce you to Mike Gravano. Why don't you say hello, Mike?
I am an Off the Books producer, recovering cherry Coke addict and lover of learning, and I've locked Steve out of the studio today. I said, no, I want to be on the bookends for this one.
Well, that's okay, because for this episode, we're going to be going back to Workiva Amplify, the big conference for people in our audience, and Steve was there. So we're going to be listening to a little bit of him and also some audit leaders that we spoke to at Amplify.
Yeah, this episode will be digging into the careers and advice of three different audit leaders. They have distinct experiences. They're all high level, but work in very different industries. And so we're like, you know what? Let's throw them all together like a delicious audit smoothie and hear what they have to say about what's going on in the broader world of audit right now. So who are we starting with, Catherine?
Let's start with Tom Rams. He's a chief audit executive in the Twin Cities. He works for a company in the manufacturing space that makes a lot of industrial to commercial floor cleaning equipment. And what else should we know about Tom?
He has degrees in accounting and management information systems, and that does come up. It's interesting how these two worlds kind of bleed together in ways that is pretty unique. And he's spent well over a decade in public accounting doing everything from external audits to SAB consulting to internal audit. So where we're going to dive in, Steve just asked Tom about the interaction between finance transformation, data management, and data architecture.
In my department, I have a huge emphasis on I don't have IT auditors and I don't have finance business auditors. It's one collective group. We're all digitally upskilling together to where I want them to be able to look for the data they need within the ERP or relevant systems, work with the right teams to get integrations or exports, and then be able to work with the data to find the risks and the relevant areas we want to audit. And I think that skill set will resonate in the next 5 to 10 years.
I love that, because actually one of my pet peeves working in the past with internal audit teams, and I love internal audit, like don't get me wrong, but it was always like they have this like separate siloed IT auditor. It was a very specific person that you're looking for, and that was great when it was an IT issue. But when a financial reporting issue touched IT, then there was always this sort of like a little bit of disconnect. It's like, well, go ask so-and-so. Well, he's just an IT auditor. He's not going to understand the financial statement assertions and all that other stuff. And that, you know, that you're kind of in this like no man's land, because I need that IT experience, but I also need somebody who just understands like basic financial, you know, audit and reporting. Anyway, I realize I'm just restating probably the very reason why you're doing this, but like that resonates with me.
But it's so true. I mean, I've lived in the SAP space for so long, and when you run into an issue, someone that can speak both languages can go, I'm going to go look at the data browser really quickly, and I'm going to start at this table, pull something here, go to this other table. I'm not quite sure where the next element is. I understand databasing, so I can look at the table of tables and just work through the challenge versus saying, oh, hold on, I got to go get, you know, Bob, who's my IT auditor, in order to figure out this problem and have to retell him the whole story, and then you lose that time.
Yeah.
Question for somebody who barely speaks either language. SAP space. What does SAP stand for here?
Systems, applications, and programs, and data processing.
Gotcha.
So it's the large ERP that a good portion of the Fortune 5 use.
Okay. Wait a minute. Hang on. You were talking about the ERP.
Mm-hmm.
The SAP stands for something?
Yes, it does.
Yep. Get out of town.
Yep, and it has words after the P.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Were those were those German words?
All of them are German words,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, there. Yep.
I didn't know if we met the company SAP, if this is a new acronym, don't know.
Well, I assumed you were talking about the company, but then you had a definition. I was like, wait a minute, yeah. Are we talking about it? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I were a client of mine like a decade ago. I wrote for SAP for a bit.
No kidding.
Yeah. Small world.
Mm-hmm. And everything really has a meaning. You just have to learn German. I have
just
a minor
German.
In Spanish, and I always thought Spanish would be the most important thing for myself. But no, my second language is SAP, learning, you know, what the different letters mean.
Okay, let's double click on that. S4HANA, the H-A-N-A. Acronym there, or do you know that? I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot. Does that mean anything?
HANA in and of itself, to me, is a word. Now, someone might have a better understanding of it, but I look at it as an appliance. And so when someone says S4HANA, I personally get a little confused because 5 years ago when I was auditing that space, it was all HANA as an application between your databases and your application level. And so with S4HANA, I think the journey of having a cloud SAP environment will be you have your database in memory in the HANA environment, and it's going to be S4 with your finance in that.
I realize we are on like an unparalleled level of nerdiness right now. Thank you for entertaining these questions. Catherine, do you want to like bring us back up to probably where we should have been flying all along?
Let me take this to a less nerdy level.
Yeah, thank you.
You mentioned a couple different languages. Have you worked internationally?
I have. I spent 2 years in Switzerland on the French-speaking side in the city of Lausanne. I was on the external audit team auditing a Global 50 client of the public accounting firm I was with. So I spent all year working with component teams. I think we had over 25 component teams, 80 stat audit teams working with cultures from around the world. Spent 2 years there. My daughter was born there. And, you know, it was a great adventure in my life.
Dual citizenship for your daughter?
No. The U.S. is like one of 5 countries that has that rule. She needs to go back for an additional 9 years, learn the language, and assimilate. So, you know, she's got a journey if she wants
it. Easy. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. What have you heard at Amplify that has really resonated with you so far?
I think the generative AI, and it's one of those emerging technologies that is so accessible to everyone, whether it's professional or personal. So for me, I've used it in my personal life, trying to research topics, or I'm building a new office for myself in the basement. What's going to happen in a framing inspection? I have no idea, but I'll use that technology to get a very quick answer. I know it's not always right, but at least I have an idea. And then for me professionally, it's not a situation where you need a large set of infrastructure like blockchain, have a value chain. I've seen companies essentially show you how the turkey for Thanksgiving made it from farm to table with a name or idea attached. But this generative AI is really accessible. It's super exciting to where I don't have to start from scratch. I can ask it to come up with a control description, a risk description, built me out a set of procedures, or even for someone in my role as a chief audit executive, summarize my speaker notes for an audit committee meeting, or make me speaker notes for a training I'm going to give to management. So there's a lot of opportunity with generative AI, and it's really your imagination is the limit.
With because there's so many different levels of quality right now because it is emerging and it's new, how do you go about verifying that research? Like, do you have an example of a time you've done it? Because it feels very, I think there's a lot of good capabilities in GenAI, but it feels very like Wikipedia of emerging technologies where you're like, it's probably right. But
I have a CPA. And so
that helps
for me when like I did a fixed assets policy, and essentially it gave me everything from acquisition, depreciation, disposal, you know, useful life, accounting methods. So I had an idea that it was generally correct, but I'm going to still take it back to standards, the pronouncements, to make sure it is.
Yeah.
And the ones that I use have a bibliography or references attached, so I'm still checking those. If I go back to my fun example of the framing inspection, I don't live in Cottage Grove, Minnesota. Yeah. So that was factually incorrect. I cannot rely upon that. So I better be asking it new questions, maybe giving it a better idea where I live.
The importance of prompts.
Yes.
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 Yeah, and the blog that you wrote on that.
I didn't want to be the guy to say
that. We did the Gen AI session, and we actually brought that up because I'm sure as you, and probably all of us have found, subtle changes in words that you put in can make drastic differences in the quality of the output that you get. I mean, that's a legit thing, right?
Yeah.
Being able to put those prompts in the right way.
You're a chief audit executive. Is there anything that you've learned at conferences like this or something that you've learned outside of school that helped get you to where you are today? Would you be willing to share with the listeners?
I think it's truly a fundamental state of curiosity, willingness to learn, try something new, not afraid to fail, that whole string of thought-provoking questions, because as you learn something like a technology of SAP, or you go into workflow technologies, RPA, generative AI, you just have to have that curiosity to ask the next question, try it out in a new way. And that has really kept my career fresh and really have kept me thinking about what could go wrong in certain situations. And it goes to everything from cyber to your traditional financial risks. ESG has emerged as a big area. And I don't have a background in ESG. So, you know, I'm taking light notes as we're going through a lot of our steering committee meetings on it. But I'm thinking about what could be a risk. And like I write a few words down and I'm asking the generative AI, help me build this out into a sentence that my sustainability team will trust, respect, etc.
Well, that was a great talk we had with Tom Rams, covering so many different subjects. And so let's continue this on and hear somebody else talk about some of those same subjects from a different perspective.
Steve and I got to talk with Charles Silvey, the global head of internal audit for a large medical equipment manufacturing firm. So we'll pick up with Charles right when I asked him to explain the global part of his title.
Yeah, so the company, and you know, as most companies are, the markets, right, are just growing dynamically outside of the U.S. So most companies that, you know, have the need to grow, they're looking outside. And so from a global standpoint, it's a challenge to have all the regulations in all the different countries that you deal with. It's a real challenge. And I think, you know, from my perspective, being a global head, it's something that I think because of the fact that I spent several years living internationally just after I left KPMG, was something that really set me up to be able to head a global company up, because there's so many nuances in living and working and regulations and even cultural that you have to be sensitive to. And the business ways of doing business are really very different.
Interesting. So it's different from just, you know, being at a company that is perhaps maybe just in one country.
Yeah. I was thinking when the question was asked, I don't think I've had any company that I've been with since my career started where it hasn't been global. So I think for me, you know, it's become something I've been better at. But I think from the time that I stopped lifeguarding, my world's been global. So
you talked a little bit about regulation, and I know there's regulation in the UK, this like SOX Lite that people have been thinking about and talking about. Can you tell us a little bit about how you're thinking, maybe not specifically in the UK, unless you'd like to share, but about the expansion of that kind of an environment globally?
Well, I think, you know, the SOX has been around now, you know, 15, almost 20 years. And I think every company has really kind of found the rhythm with it, right? It becomes kind of, I don't want to call it regular, but there's a lot of work that goes into scoping and there's a lot of work that goes into understanding it. And I think as the other countries come online and start to put in those types of regulations, I think it's just going to be a step, right? We'll take that step. We'll understand what the regulation is. We'll understand if there's any nuances to it that are different from what we're already doing. Because there's certain ones already in India, right? India already has a regulation that requires an internal audit and a SOX inspection for their statutory work. And so, again, with the UK, we'll look at that, we'll understand what it is and decide if we need to do anything different. Because, you know, like with something like the GDPR, that's become now kind of the global standard, the, you know, the where everybody kind of pushes towards. And you may not have regulations in the EU, but you look at that and you say, that's a standard. That's a pretty good standard. We'll go after that one. And I think SOX in the U.S. really has set that standard and that line where people will achieve that standard.
Do you characterize that as creating more friction globally? Or do you say, well, yeah, if you do it wrong, there's friction, but if you do it right, there's actually a real benefit to the business?
Yeah, I honestly think that as, you know, SOX or controls has really taken and become part of the way the company does business, I think there's definitely been benefit. Now, is some of the work we do without benefit? Absolutely. But I think there is a huge amount of benefit that comes back to the company, that comes back to the shareholders, that comes back to the executives. And really the value is in that process and that rigor that gets applied to the financials that 25 years ago wasn't being applied.
As a former financial reporting person, I'm glad to hear you concede that maybe there's some things that we could.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The regulation, I think even for the external auditors, I think the internal teams can set what is the right level of testing that we need to do and the right level of work that we need to do. It's the externals who really are dictated by the PCAOB. Now, we have to follow the externals to an extent to make sure that we're not completely an outlier.
Meeting external auditors, right?
External auditors, yep. Yeah. But if we don't see any value in something we're doing, we'll just have conversations with management. We'll understand and explain why we just don't feel that testing that area has any value or any material impact to the company's financial statements.
It was great to hear from Charles. Before we get to our final speaker, let's take a quick commercial break.
Are you relying on desktop tools and shared drives? Stuck in a vicious, never-ending cycle of back-and-forth emails? Wish you had more time to proactively manage risk? Stop wasting valuable time corralling colleagues and updating status reports and start spending more time on what matters with Workiva. Create alignment across key stakeholders, yes, all of them, with centralized collaboration. Drive better business decisions with insights on demand and spend more time on value-added work by automating those awful repetitive tasks. Plus, connect your GRC processes with your ESG and financial reporting all in the same platform. Seriously, see why audit and risk teams love Workiva at workiva.com/risk. That's workiva.com/risk.
And we are back with the final guest of the episode, Waseem Samaan, the global head of internal audit and risk at Boomi, the integration and automation platform. We had a far-reaching conversation with Waseem, including how auditors can get a seat at the table. And I kick it off here asking why automation is so important in the field of audit and risk. Can I ask a dumb question? Because you said automation reduces risk. Is it just because that takes the human element out of it a little and human error reduces
Correct.
That? Okay.
Correct. So automation reduces risk in multiple fronts. So the first and most important is the fact you're eliminating human intervention, which eliminates human error or also fraud. I'll just say the F word here. But in addition to that, because it's automated, you're going to get your information faster. Because it's automated, the amount of work you have to do as an auditor, external audit, internal audit, compliance, management, to say, hey, is this information complete? Is it accurate? It's significantly reduced. But like I said, timeliness of information is golden in the era of 1 million things changing per day, and you need that information fast. Automation does that for you.
Oh, that makes sense. Thank you.
Looking ahead to the next year, what are your priorities?
Oh, my God. Surviving. No. honestly, I'm not your typical internal auditor. I love Boomi, very passionate about it. And I think just to continue to expand and to show that audit is a business partner. It's a critical role, audit and risk, and it deserves a seat just like the CMO or the CTO or the CIO at the table of the CEO. It is a key aspect of the business. So I will continue to grow that presence at Boomi and everywhere. I'm also on the board of the IAA, which I'm very passionate about in the profession. I'm also on a bunch of chief risk officer roundtable, a chief auditor, chief audit executive roundtable, and just continue to learn and stay on top of that. Now, you probably ask from a risk perspective, what do you care about most? Well, I mean, obviously, the laws, you know, being a company that's in like 26 countries, you know, Boomi, staying on top of all the regulations worldwide and stuff like that. So that will continue to be a priority for us, is to make sure from a regulation compliance. And then obviously my heart, babies, socks, making sure that we don't have socks findings.
Yeah. You mentioned having a seat at the table. What has worked for you in terms of being seen as that strategic person, that strategic internal auditor?
Don't be a police officer. 75% business partner. It's not easy. Look, I had to build these departments from scratch. At Fox, if I was in an audit, you said jump. And I was a manager, even when I started as senior auditor. I was a little schmuck. But you said jump, and people were like, how high? It didn't even matter if it was general counsel. It didn't mean if it was I can't say their names, but producers, very, very well-known producers, people respected the function. Unfortunately, pre-IPO companies, that's not there.
Is it more antagonistic, it feels, from their end? Or?
They just don't like rules.
Yeah.
They don't like... I'm not saying Boomy, I'm just saying in general.
Right.
So it's a lot of education, it's a lot of hand-holding. And it's not that they don't want to do well, they just might not know what to do.
Right, it's new.
And, you know, you were scrapped for resources. So they're also scrapped for resources. So it's like, where do I put my time? And so, you know, like building something is a lot harder than just maintaining. Imagine your house if you had to build it from scratch or just, you know, once in a while call the plumber and maintain it. It's different. So it's a lot. I actually think being an auditor at a mid-sized company is a lot harder than at a, you know, a Fortune 100 because you have to wear like 7 different hats. But how do you get a seat at the table? I'll give you some examples. You bring in revenue for them. You become their business partner where you show them how you can automate stuff, which means they're going to reduce the burden on them, right? They're not going to sit there and have to do all this stuff manually. So now you're their friend. Oh, you're helping us transform. You're really becoming this transformation officer for us. I'm addressing risk. I'm happy. I'm also happy because once they automate, I only have to test one. But at the same time, they're all happy because you're making their job easier, which is not usually what the typical auditor does. So again, be proactive. If you're proactive and you help them build their processes from the beginning, right, you help them automate, you help them integrate. I've done a lot of projects at Boomi, for example. They were a carve-up from Dell, so there was a lot of processes to set up and things to set up, so a lot of manual things, right? But then we used our own Boomi product to automate and integrate. And it's been amazing. There's like been 30 SOX findings, audit findings, 20 to 30, that we basically have used our own product. Now, imagine that as a win-win. The CEO and all the marketing's happy. You're making a business case for us. You're drinking your own champagne. I'm happy because I'm reducing risk. Guess what? It's our own product, so it's free. I don't have to ask for budgets.
Right.
So it's a win-win for everyone.
Excellent.
For that proactivity, because you said it's not really typical, is that something that came naturally to you, or did you have a mentor who kind of led you that way to be proactive and be that partner?
I had the most amazing boss at Fox. He was our senior vice president. He told me, he's like, you're not our typical auditor, but for some reason, you make it work and you flourish. He's like, you just don't have the standard way of doing things. And I gave you room to see where this goes. And he's like, you did not disappoint. And I really, really respect that, especially at a Fortune 100. That's really hard. You know, there's a lot of red tape, right? And the fact that he believed in me, he's still my mentor, and I still have so much major respect for him. He also told me one time a quote that still stuck with me to this day. You know, it came in from the Big Four where your life was, get this done by the due date. You have to file. And you're used to working those 70 hours, and he would see us work late, and he's like, why are you working late? And I'm like, oh, to meet deadline. And he's like, whose life is dependent if you don't finish this report until Monday? No one. You're not a doctor. You know, you're not saving lives. To me, I'm like, well, I'm saving our investors and, you know, the employees because they're, you know, but no, at the end of the day, you're, you know, the human element was very big to him. Until this day, human element for me is very big. And I think that's why I was able to flourish in my career. I'm not going to lie. I was probably the youngest chief audit executive for a public company, like the head of internal audit. I was 30 years old in my first gig. It's unheard of. And I've been that in 2 more companies. And I continue to flourish. And I think it's be proactive, be dynamic, be agile.
Are you a mentor to people now?
I am, including one of my direct reports. He took this job because he got a bunch of offers. And he's like, oh, my God, everyone's like, go work for Wasim. You'll have the... Anyway, our chief accounting officer was meeting with him and she wanted him to come work for her. He does an amazing job. And he's like, no. She's like, well, what are you inspired to be? He's like, I want to be Wasim when I grow up.
Oh, my God.
That's got to feel good to hear.
It does. When I hired him, I told him he reminded me a lot of me. He has a lot of energy. He's very passionate. We're very big on diversity and inclusion. He leads our Hispanic group. I'm the executive sponsor of Pride. And rewinding also, by the way, talking about how not being standard, at Fox, I actually created the first ERG, and it was Pride. And everyone's like, that's a career-ending move. This is Fox, which also owns Fox News, but it's all Fox. So Fox Studios, everything. It's a magic, amazing company, by the way. I loved working there. And they were all wrong. It actually made me flourish. It actually made me meet Rupert Murdoch, which today was announced, stepped down, actually, as chairman and head of Fox. But, like, it put me on the radar, and it actually made my job flourish. And even on my audits, it made me succeed because when I walked in, especially when in these big companies, no one knows anyone, you know, like to do a payroll audit, I still remember they're like, wait, you're the president of Pride. Oh, here's your support. And every audit, I was the first person to get my support. I was the first one to finish my work. And actually, almost every, because I built this trust and I got to work with a lot of people, and you work with a lot of marketing people, the number one person, like almost everything I touched turned into investigation because people trusted you.
Yeah.
Because they saw you not as a police officer, but as a friend.
So would you, a piece of advice would you give, like embrace your interests, embrace your identity, bring that into your day job, and that'll actually help you stand out a little more?
I think me being who I am is what made me flourish. And I still remember some of my coworkers who are still managers because even though they were my managers, they're still managers because they were too petty about the $1 teeny overage or I don't know, like stuff like that. I think being who you are is awesome. And look, I'm in the most conservative field, I ain't gonna lie. And it's very hard, but if I could be who I am in this field and be this loud, flamboyant person, then that should be a role model to everyone else. And it really was. And not to my own horn, even at Fox, I've had people cry because like of you, I was able to do this, or because of that, seeing you in this field, I can come out in marketing, or I can come out in sports, because Fox Sports was very conservative in theory. But Fox actually was the most liberal company I worked for, by the way. Yeah, they were like, I'm telling you, phenomenal. They were like in 1985, like when no one used to do it, had like same-sex benefits. Like they were just, I mean, when I was there, we added, because who could say no to the auditors, right? And ever since I created ERGs at every company I went to, except Boomi already had it, so I'm very proud of them. But because of my role, like no one's going to, you can't give me a answer because I have access to everything. So what are you going to tell me? There's no budget or this or that. I'm like, that's not true. It's against policy, really? Because we write policies. No, but you know, you're using your influence to do good, you know? But yeah, it was great.
Find them on LinkedIn, everybody. It was great hearing from all of them. What did you think, Mike?
Oh, totally great hearing from them. I feel like I learned so much about the wide world of audit. And speaking of interesting, we're not quite ready to end the show yet. Steve has a pet question, and I wanted to include a couple answers to that. He liked at Amplify last year, he just kept asking, does ESG freak you out? And so we're going to hear what Charles and Tom had to say about that.
Does ESG freak you out? How are you thinking about ESG, again, globally speaking?
No, you know, for somebody who was there at the birth of Sox, and who lived pre and post, I don't think it freaks me out. I see the same types of hysteria happening within boards and audit committees and management and everything else, and a lot of the practitioners, because it's the unknown, right? I think once the regulations are set, I think that, you know, CSRD is already set, but I think to the extent when the SEC comes in and opines, all the companies will then be able to kind of go, okay, we know what we need to do. We'll go out and do it. It will be rocky for the first several years, and then it'll find its rhythm just like Sox has. I mean, Sox was bad in the first few years. I mean, there was a lot of work that had to be done that was ridiculous. There was a lot of work that had to be done that's no longer being done. But I think it's changed over time, and now it's got value for the most part, and I think that's going to be the same thing with ESG.
Does ESG freak you out? Steve, does it freak you out?
It freaks me out in the sense that there's going to be a lot of requirements and a lot of stakeholders with a very small window of time. Beyond that, I'm super excited to see CSRD actually moving forward. California should be following very quickly. I'm hoping SEC follows. Because for me, having it been in public, it was an area we were starting to sell business on. And for me, you know, you got the early exposure to it. You felt okay about it. You knew why it was important. And as someone that loves technology, you can see the next steps for our climate, for how it impacts manufacturing with hazardous materials and on-site injuries. And so I'm excited about it more than I'm freaked out. But there's a lot of stakeholders and a lot of moving parts that have never done something like this before, even if you compare it to SOX. Like, SOX has been IT and finance. You might get some subgrouped, but this will now impact the entire organization on the R&D and how you build your product.
And if I could, freak out might be a little bit strong. I've been coached to stop using. In fact, I said at a customer meeting like 2 years ago, like, now's the time to be freaking out. And I still regret that. But now's the time to be taking it seriously, because I think you're exactly right, is that, hey, you don't have a whole lot of time and you have these mandates that are coming quickly. And honestly, now's the time to like figure that stuff out. And what's so cool about today versus maybe, let's say, even a year or two ago, is that now we start to have a little bit of a clear path as to like how to get started that we didn't have. And I do think you have a little bit of flexibility with regulations and others as you're waiting for the dust to settle. But at some point, you're not going to have that leeway anymore, right? And that's why like now is really the time when you've got to be taking this stuff seriously.
Absolutely. My organization may have to comply by 2026. And so we've got to start doing numbers from 2025. So we got to be thinking of in 2024. We're almost at the end of 2023. So,
yep.
I mean, it's going to come fast and heavy. And with CSRD, there's so many different domains of data. So stakeholders, it's going to be a lot.
I like that you have that big picture and also a forward-looking perspective on it.
Yeah.
A big thanks to all of our guests, Tom Rams, Wasim Saman, and Charles Sylvie. And a big thanks to you, dear listener, for surfing along with us. This has been Off the Books, presented by Workiva.
Please subscribe, leave a review, tell your buddies if you like the show, sound off in those comments if you're watching on YouTube, and feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. We will be back next week talking to Nick Garistathos, the Chief Accounting Officer and Corporate Controller at Talkdesk. Captain and guest host Josh Gerch talked with Nick about how to be seen as a strategic leader in the accounting and finance function, what to think about if you're preparing to go public, and so much more. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave. We'll